The city of San Francisco, which contains some of the most expensive real estate in the world, has elected to encourage the growth of farms within its city limits. This leads us to ask, can farms be made to grow in San Francisco?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 983rd edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in the Beaujolais who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Aaron, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I have a question for you, Aaron.
Okay.
Do you think farms can be made to grow in San Francisco?
Debatable.
Well, folks, the publisher gave me an assignment to write about ways to make money growing crops on small survivalist treats way out there in the country. I failed. And here's why. While researching the subject of farming for profit, I ran up against the fact in the Census of Agriculture. Give this a real close listen here. Whereas the average acre of farmland in America's heartland earned a little over $300 per acre per year, the average acre of farmland within the city limits of San Francisco earned $76,421 per acre per year. And that was at a time when $1.30 could buy a whole gallon of gasoline. The fact is, money is in the city. And so the book about farming survivalist retreats way out there in the countryside became Metro Farm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. When Metro Farm was released to the public, its assertion that one could generate a substantial income by farming small parcels of land in or near the city for the city was pretty much hooted down by ag economists around the land who asserted that one must get big or get out. And so farmers got bigger, got out. Thanks to crops genetically engineered to kill insects and withstand poisons, one farmer out in the country may now grow thousands of acres of crops with no insects and no pests. And that's a big deal. But wait, how does food that has been infused with triple-stack pesticides and repeatedly drenched in herbicides satisfy the metropolitan hunger for foods that are colorful, flavorful, fragrant, nutritious, safe, and unique? And so today, the city of San Francisco has elected to encourage the growth of urban farms on its vacant lots by reducing the tax burden on lots devoted to farming from $10,000 a year to $100 a year. This effort leads us to ask, can farms be made to grow in San Francisco? And so today we have a couple of people who are really in the know because they're right there in the heat of the battle. First, we have David Chu, who is the supervisor, San Francisco Board of Supervisors. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me on.
So pleased to have you along. First of all, what on earth does a supervisor do for those people who out there who don't know?
So I serve as the president of San Francisco's Board of Supervisors. We are the city and county legislative body for San Francisco. We set the laws, we approve the budget, and we do what Congress does for the United States or the California State Legislature does for our state of California, but only at the local level.
So you are a supervisor of San Francisco, and you're author of this legislation that kind of follows up on a California state piece of legislation to reduce property taxes on urban land if that land is dedicated to agriculture. David, just a quick question. Where did the notion come into your mind that, do you remember that moment that you thought, wow, we could actually do this?
Urban agriculture and urban gardening has been enormously popular in San Francisco for years. In fact, this is my third piece of legislation to move forward the urban agriculture movement in our city. There are thousands of residents in dense urban environments that want to have the opportunity to be part of any tiny little corner of the city to help create a beautiful space, grow food, to do things that are good for the environment and for public health, and really build community. And it's not about people becoming full-time professional farmers. It's about folks being able to take a couple hours a week with a green thumb to grow some tomatoes, grow some squash, grow some beautiful flowers, do it for the beauty of it, do it to be able to put some food on the table that they can eat that they made from around the corner. And our legislation was really in part designed to target some of the more vacant and blighted little corners in our urban jungle, our concrete jungles, to turn them into greenery, spaces that may not have found other uses, that may not yet be converted into housing, and to really nudge some owners of property who hadn't thought about this use to consider it to create an urban garden, a little oasis in the middle of the urban jungle.
So your notion of urban agriculture is really more directed toward probably urban gardening and community gardening in that regard, correct?
Absolutely. We have had not only thousands of residents that want to do this, but enormous wait lists. In most of our urban gardens, there are two-year waiting lists from residents that want to do this, and they're just simply, as you can imagine, very little space to farm in San Francisco, and many long existing gardens have been lost to other uses, and because land is scarce and very expensive in our 7x7 city, and landowners often choose to develop properties elsewhere, what we wanted to do was to create a little bit of an incentive for some property owners to consider urban agriculture as a use for their land.
Well, you know, if one were to look down on San Francisco from way up on the satellite, it kind of looks like a thumbnail made of concrete and cement and blacktop. Where on earth are you going to find spaces in all that concrete and asphalt to plant gardens? Is there any space?
That's a fair point, and that's exactly why we're doing this. And if you go around the city, you will find little plots of land, oftentimes a lot that's vacant, that's blighted, that's not being used, and hundreds of residents who live around that lot who look at it and say, you know, that piece of property is not going to be developed into housing, if that's not going to be turned into a school or into retail space, why don't we just garden with it? Why don't we have the opportunity to all enjoy the space and build community and build a place where people can grow and grow things that we can put on our table, that we can eat, that we can enjoy, that are beautiful and really help promote our environment and public health.
So what you have done for the city is pretty much the same thing that we have done for the country, for farms, for farmlands in the country. If you agree to withhold your land from development out there in the country, then your property will be taxed at a different, more favorable rate. If you agree to keep it out of development, if you develop it, it will be taxed at the development rate, right? And that's kind of what we're shooting for in the city with the legislation, correct?
Absolutely, and the idea is that a property owner needs to commit that the land is only going to be used exclusively for agriculture for at least a five-year period. And if it turns out that they want to develop the land for some other purpose before the five-year period ends, they need to pay the city back for the benefits financially that they had received for that.
Mm-hmm. And I know the legislation does contain provisions for commercial agriculture as well, does it not?
Absolutely. It used to be in San Francisco until a few years ago, until another piece of legislation that I passed, that you actually couldn't grow things in our city to be able to sell. And we have so many folks who you make the zucchini and you want to be able to sell the zucchini bread at the local farmer's market, and we literally forbid that from happening. We no longer do that. So we're not. What we're trying to do is eliminate unnecessary bureaucratic barriers for people to be able to engage in this activity at a small scale or at whatever scale they're able to do it at.
Are you a gardener?
You know, when I was growing up, my mother was a gardener, and that's in part how I got involved in the urban agriculture movement here. I love being able to spend the time with my fingers in the dirt, and it's extremely satisfying to nurture something, to see it grow, and then ultimately to be able to eat it.
Transformative. Also with us today, we have Phil Ginsberg, who's the general manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. So we're going to be working with him. David, can you stick with us for a little while?
I could probably stick around for another 5 minutes.
Okay, then we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will continue talk with David Chu, who is a supervisor of the City of San Francisco. And by golly, they're making farms grow in San Francisco. You can join us today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Also with us, Phil Ginsberg, General Manager, San Francisco Recreation and Parks. His job will be to put all of this into effect, I suspect, which is going to be no small job at all. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, you're invited to participate. Pick up your phone and join us. We will be right back after these very important messages.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
Well, holy smokes, they're going to put farms in San Francisco. But do you think farms can be made to grow in San Francisco? Well, that's the question on the table, and we have a couple of very astute individuals here to help us out. David Chu, who is a supervisor for the City of San Francisco, and also we have Phil Ginsberg, who is the general manager of the Parks and Rec Department. Phil, quick hello.
Good morning.
Good. Hold on for just a second. We got a couple things to finish with Supervisor Chu, and we'll pick you up. Supervisor Chu, a quick question. As the political point person for this effort, there must have been some kind of resistance in using open space for gardens when apartments in San Francisco are going for $2,000 a month per bedroom.
I have to admit, I was very surprised at the fact there really was no opposition to this legislation. It passed unanimously, in part because there's such a robust community of residents that are interested in this, in part because we crafted the policy to require our Board of Supervisors to approve each of the plots so that we can analyze in every instance in which we want to consider this, are the tax benefits going to be worth it? But at the end of the day, if a property owner wants to turn their vacant platted lot into housing that's much needed, and frankly, dealing with our affordability crisis and how we improve and increase our housing stock has been my number one concern in San Francisco. If a property owner wants to do that, they can absolutely do that, and they will, and every day they do. But what we're saying is for those random places where there's an opportunity and a property owner may not have an immediate desire to turn a lot of land into housing, we want to be able to incent this. And one of the things that's exciting for me and for us here in San Francisco, this is an idea that came from the San Francisco urban agriculture community. It was literally, no pun intended, homegrown. And now that we've passed it, we've heard from cities all around the state of California, Los Angeles, Oakland, Richmond, Berkeley, Santa Cruz, and including your city of Santa Cruz, that are interested in figuring out how to locally enact these sorts of incentive zones. And as someone who has been a local supervisor who now in the process of running for the state assembly, I really would love to see this take off and flourish around the state of California, so that our urban cities around the state can really get back to our roots and really be on the forefront of a very exciting urban agriculture movement.
And, you know, with respect to roots, if you look back in history, you know, it's only been a few short decades in which cities have been fed from distant lands. You know, the cities typically were fed from locations very close throughout history. And only recently, very recently, have we kicked agriculture out of our lives. Do you think, David, as that we miss that connection with the land when we live in a city that's just so big and robust and concreted as San Francisco?
Absolutely. And I think the fact that many urban residents, we will travel an hour or two to go to a more agricultural part of California to pick berries, pick fruit, and be amongst nature. I think there's something very primal about this. The idea that we are connecting with Mother Earth. And I think that is why this policy has been so widely supported without controversy and something that I really hope can be adopted around the state. We certainly need this in with the crisis of global warming, with the fact that much of our food travels hundreds if not thousands of miles to get to our dinner table. We can do better. And the idea that we can do this just a little bit and create some oases in our urban jungles, our concrete neighborhoods, I think makes a lot of sense.
Do you think it transformative of citizenry?
I hope so. You know, San Francisco, we've been on the cutting edge of so many things. We are the city that started the fight for marriage equality. We were the city that set the first living wage and established universal health care. We've been on the forefront of the environmental movement. And we have in recent years really been on the cutting edge of urban agriculture and urban gardening. And if you were to come to San Francisco, you will meet hundreds of folks who are doctors and lawyers and carpenters and teachers by day, but for a couple of hours in the late afternoon or on the weekends, they've got green thumbs and they're urban gardeners, and that's part of what makes our city so wonderfully vibrant and hopefully more green.
Well, do you recommend that when people do go to San Francisco, they wear some flowers in their hair?
That is something our city has been known for, and something I'm proud. We are a beacon for. We are a city that really truly appreciates a whole variety of cultures and countercultures and diversity, and certainly the city of St. Francis has always stood for peace and flowers in our hair.
Supervisor Chu, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have to run off, but really appreciate your joining us today and appreciate your effort to bring some growth and vitality back to the city by the bay. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, you're in good hands with Phil Ginsberg, who is charged with actually carrying out this program in San Francisco. But thank you for having me on the show.
You really appreciate it. And then let's do go to Phil Ginsberg. Phil is the General Manager of San Francisco Recreation and Parks. Did I get that right, or is it Parks and Recreation, Phil?
No, you got it right. It's Recreation and Parks in San Francisco.
Good. And your job is to, okay, we're going to have urban farms and urban gardens in San Francisco. How on earth? First of all, let me pick up that recreation part of it. Do you see this, as did Supervisor Chu, a recreational activity for your citizens?
Absolutely. I think it's predominantly a recreational activity and, you know, good environmental stewardship to have community gardens and urban farms sprinkled throughout the urban landscape. Mm-hmm. We're really blessed in San Francisco with a very robust park system. We have 4,000 acres of open space in our 7 square miles. Nearly 15% of the city's land is green space.
15? Did you say 15%?
15%, which is really good. But we are a very you know, intense urban environment, and we're becoming more and more dense. And for many people, parks and community gardens are their front yards or backyards. And, you know, it's a really important recreational element for San Franciscans. You know, in addition to, obviously the focus on, sustainability and, you know, some locally sourced food.
Okay.
So there's, yeah.
Well, I'm going to really quickly pick up Melinda. Melinda's been waiting on the line. Melinda, are you there?
Hello. I'm here, Michael.
Good. Welcome to the food chain. We've got a couple minutes left, or just a couple minutes left, so I wanted to pick you up. You're with Phil Ginsberg, Michael Olson on the food chain. Go ahead.
Terrific.
Melinda, Melinda's actually my colleague. She actually runs our urban farming program.
So Melinda.
In the Recreation and Parks Department.
Melinda, I'm locking you in so you can't leave now. So you're now part of the program. So would you like to introduce yourself? Oops, I missed her. Okay. She's Melinda who, Phil?
Melinda Stockman. She is a colleague of mine, and she actually oversees our urban agriculture program.
Good. Okay, good. So we're going to pick her up. We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll pick her up when we come back, and it will be Phil and Melinda from San Francisco Park Recreation and Parks. And one of the big questions I want to ask you, Phil and Melinda, is how are you going to integrate this into the culture of San Francisco? Because there are so many cultures in San Francisco, from those who inhabit the very peaks of the skyscrapers to those who live on the streets, and all of those communities seem to be very vibrant. How on earth are you going to put urban agriculture into that milieu? Holy smokes, that's going to be interesting. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain Radio program with Phil Ginsberg and Melinda Stockton and you. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back. Phone numbers 831-479-1980, 800-624-2665. Farms in San Francisco? Well, why not? That's where the people are. That's where the money is. Why shouldn't there be farms in San Francisco? That's the question on the table today, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. We have Melinda Stockman, who is in charge of running the urban agriculture program for the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. Melinda, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you very much.
So pleased to have you aboard. We had your boss, Phil Ginsberg, who, and we also had supervisor, David Chu, and now we have you, and we're honored to have you aboard because you're the person with the hands on the job, right?
Terrific. Thank you, Michael. Yes, sorry. Phil had to run to his daughter's soccer game, and we are actually hosting a San Francisco Rec and Park Open Gardens Day today with about 20 of our community gardens, so we're a little on the fly here, but I'm pleased to be here. Thank you.
Well, when one lives in a big city, one is always on the fly. Not true. Isn't that true?
It certainly is.
You're a very busy girl in the city. Now, you've got a urban ag program. Is this new for you, this program of encouraging urban agriculture and urban gardening?
This is new for us. So as Supervisor Chu mentioned, just about a year and a half ago, we had the urban agriculture legislation in San Francisco, which provided for kind of an interagency group to get together and look at what is the city already doing with urban ag and community gardening and what is left to do. And so just this past year in January, Rec and Park kind of took on the management of this citywide coordination endeavor, which is called the Urban Ag Program. And my colleague, Hannah Shulman, is running that for Rec and Park in the city. And I'm working closely with her running Rec and Park's Community Gardens Program, which is sort of under the umbrella of the Urban Ag Program.
Okay. All of which are very confusing, to me. But as long as there's two capable people of pulling all of this together, I'm totally impressed. But how do you pull it together when there are so many different cultures in San Francisco? You have, gosh, those people who live at the very top of the skyscrapers. You have those people who are living on the streets, of which there is a substantial number. How do you pull all this together in a city that's so incredibly diverse as San Francisco?
That's a great question, Michael. Well, we have, you know, I think there's a lot of common ground in what Phil and David Chu were saying earlier about the activating the green space. You know, wherever, whatever background you come from, we all realize here in the city that there's a limited amount of space to work with. And so whether it's a plot-based community garden where, you know, you're growing your herbs and kind of getting your rest and respite, or it's a more communally-based Alemany farm that we have where you're maybe growing some produce to give to the homeless, you know, we can get folks' heads wrapped around that idea, and then we kind of find their niche within the larger urban ag umbrella.
Well, as somebody who works for recreation and parks, What significance is gardening to the recreation of city people? I mean, you're living in an island, as I was describing it earlier. If you look at San Francisco from a satellite, it's like a thumbnail made out of concrete and cement and asphalt. And wow, a little bit of greenery might help a little, huh?
Indeed. So we have 38 community gardens just managed by Rec and Park alone, and we have some other gardens in the city as well. And 38 community gardens. We have we now have 1,600 people who are members of our gardens, having plots or volunteering at the gardens. So it's a pretty good number, and as Supervisor Chu mentioned, we have tons of people still on the waiting list. So there's clearly a demand and an interest in urban agriculture and in farming or smaller scale gardening in the city.
Everybody wants to get their fingers in the dirt.
Exactly. And in terms of your question about the recreation, we just opened a brand new community garden in Golden Gate Park itself.
Wow.
It's kind of a hybrid of, you know, individual or household based garden boxes, and then a kind of a team or a group based gardening. And when we opened that garden last October, we had one of the community members from just up the street say that, you know, he had met more people on that volunteer work day to get the boxes built than he had 14 years living in the neighborhood. So, you know, now, you know, that it's really, you know, in addition to growing food and flowers and herbs, it's an opportunity for people to come together and to recreate as a community.
Well, I, having served on the board of a community garden here in my community, I see the real big value. Everybody gets some food and everybody gets to grow. But the real big value I see in community gardens is the community.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's go and pick up, Rob Benetton, who is an urban ag advisor. Rob, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, Bill, Melinda, and Michael.
Are you a San Franciscan?
I'm not. I'm in the East Bay, but I serve San Francisco as well as the other five counties around the Bay.
Okay. So you're an urban ag advisor. You work with the San Francisco area urban agriculture?
Right. I work with the University of California Cooperative Extension System.
Well, that's good because I received an email from a friend, Rachel Searles, down in L.A., and, you know, she talked about the efforts UC Ag Extension, Cooperative Extension, is putting into urban agriculture and the resources that are becoming available. So are we starting to look toward bringing the production of food back to the city where it always was until a few short decades ago?
Absolutely. You know, UC Cooperative Extension has been around for 100 years helping farmers across the state, but in more recent times, the Urban Ag Collaborative team has helped develop a number of resources, particularly focused around issues that urban growers have to deal with, and we have a website that will help with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start right there. Melinda, what do urban gardeners have to face up to? What obstacles are there into developing a successful community garden?
Great. So I think the first one that everyone has talked about is space, limited amount of space. In San Francisco here, we also have tons of microclimates right here within the 7x7 mile city. We have the challenge of finding a space. Fortunately, we have some parklands and also even kind of remnant public works, you know, corners and former streets that we can take advantage of. So that's a big piece of it. And for the folks who want to get involved, the challenge is just being able to stay on that wait list for 2 or 3 or 4 years and wait it out and get involved.
A two-year wait. Wow. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. But I'll ask Rob, you seem to be more on the economical side, the commercial side of community agriculture, right? Metropolitan agriculture.
Well, it's partially that, but it's also about safe growing practices and conservation of resources.
Okay, we want to hold that. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. And I want to also ask about the obstacles commercial farmers face in metropolitan areas. And we'll go to the phones. We have Anna waiting in to talk as well. So do stay tuned. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio. We have Melinda Stockman, who's with the San Francisco Recreation and Parks. She's responsible for making urban agriculture happen in San Francisco. Rob Bennington, who is a UC Cooperative Extension Advisor on Urban Agriculture, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, welcome back. Michael Olson here, Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking about putting farms, growing farms in San Francisco. What do you think out there? Do you think farms can be made to grow in San Francisco? Some must think that way because they just passed a law that reduces property taxes on vacant lots in San Francisco, hugely, actually, from $10,000 to $100 or something like that, which means if you keep your vacant lot in farming or gardening, you can save a lot of money and maybe make a little money. So what do we face when we try to commercialize a small parcel of land close to the city? I recall reading a story about a watermelon farmer on the outskirts of a big city in China. Just at the peak of his harvest, when his melons were just ripe, a whole bunch of people swarmed out of the city and stripped his watermelon field bare, wondering if that wouldn't happen in a big city. What do you think, Rob Bennington? You're a urban ag advisor for UC Cooperative Extension. Something like that ever happen?
Well, potentially, water rates are a concern. There are some barriers and challenges around growing food in the city. Soil quality is an issue, and also pest management's another one. Our new website, UCANR, which is Agriculture and Natural Resources, UCANR/urban ag, helps folks mitigate these issues and also learn about other ways that they can grow food as well, and also about policy issues related to urban agriculture.
You know, that brings up something really interesting. It's my contention that to be an urban or metropolitan farmer, one must be very astute, if not even intelligent, to pull it off, because there are so many variables. Melinda, do you see those variables in starting, community gardens in San Francisco?
We do. We do see the variables. And we had a press event with Assemblymember Phil Ting last year at Little City Gardens, which is a small-scale commercial operation that mainly grows lettuce here in the Mission District in San Francisco. And so I think, these are big questions that we're working with at the local level with folks like Rob and UC Cooperative Extension, with small scale farmers and also with SPUR and the SF Urban Ag Alliance to kind of work through these. And I think this recent legislation, the Urban Ag Incentive Zone Act, allows us to take a look at, removing some of those barriers and checking out what the viability is. From the Rec and Park standpoint, for gardens and urban ag sites on our properties, the focus is really recreation and community and activating the green space. But since we're housing the larger citywide program, we're also kind of the conduit for looking at these issues. And I think that this is just kind of the next step in allowing us to further pursue what is the viability.
I wonder if anybody's ever calculated the economic value of recreation embodied in community gardens. I bet it's worth a lot of money right there. Let's go to Anna. Anna, welcome to the Food Chain. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me. It's very interesting. First, a shout out to Hannah, who's my good friend up there in San Francisco. But I'm the director of Mesa Verde Gardens. We're a community agriculture program here in Santa Cruz County. We have 6 community gardens and 3 new ones starting up next year. And one thing I've heard about this AB 551, I think it was passed last year to make urban ag tax exemptions available, but I heard from our county supervisors that it's not available to us because we don't have enough people in our county.
Oh.
Even though our cities, you know, Washington.
So you have to be an urban. We're not urban enough to be an urban district. Then is
even though our, you know, within the town, it's people don't have dense housing.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Anna, because evidently from what Supervisor Chu said, people from all over the United States are interested in what's going on in San Francisco and in Los Angeles and throughout urban areas around California. But evidently, our little nook here in Santa Cruz County is not urban enough to qualify. Does that ring true, Rob and Melinda?
Yes, I don't have the exact number, but I believe it's 250,000. So it is the legislation is meant for larger urban areas.
Mm-hmm. And so you're out of luck, Anna.
Well, it's interesting, though, because most of our gardeners in Watsonville are farm workers, and they live in very dense housing. So we've been able to get land from churches so far, and we're trying with the school district. But it seems like a short-sightedness of the legislature that this isn't an issue that faces everybody. It's not just urban.
I hear a little bit of wee-wee-wee on some, too?
Well, we have the same issues.
Yeah, you know? There it is.
That's all.
But isn't it easier to find vacant land in the smaller areas, smaller with less population?
Well, I don't live in San Francisco, so I don't know. But I can tell you the wait lists in Santa Cruz are about 3 years for a garden plot. So not that different. Yeah.
So there it is. So the demand is everywhere then.
Yep, and we're growing really fast because there's more and more interest in what we're doing. So I think the interest is just as big here in the our county is urban county. So.
Well, let me ask you this, Rob. Do you see this phenomenon of community farming and community agriculture spreading across the land, or is that something unique to California?
I definitely see it spreading across the land. There are many cities that have different initiatives around urban ag and community gardening. I would also say that this legislation has the potential to sow the seeds for longer-term open space preservation as well. Keeping land in production or at least as green space helps improve air quality, local water quality, and ambient air temperatures as well.
Good enough. And spreading seeds is what we're doing here today, right? That's our job today, spreading some seeds. This is the Food Chain. When we get back from our last break, I want to ask Anna, Melinda, and Rob what they see urban gardening and urban agriculture doing to metropolitan landscapes and to people. What do you think? You stay tuned right back. Food Chain Radio. Well, folks, if you think about it for even the briefest of moments, you'll realize that food is freedom. And the more we must rely on others for our food, the less freedom we have. And can't think of it in any clearer terms. So when you live in the city, you're kind of stuck relying on others for your food. And throughout history, we had a pretty close relationship with city people with the food because it wasn't that far away. Today, it's way, way far away. And I think that being so removed from our food really has a way of having an impact on how we think of ourselves and our lives. And perhaps maybe even a little bit this whole movement toward urban agriculture, urban farming will change the way we think. At least that's the way I think. Melinda Stockton, what do you think?
I think that you're right. I think today, you know, young people, older folks here in the city, you know, we're often not very well connected with our natural resources. And I used to work as a school garden coordinator. And, you know, there's the idiom that a child who doesn't like, you know, kale, when they plant the seed and they grow the kale and they make a salad in the classroom, they, you know, somehow all of a sudden start to like it. And I think that community gardening and urban ag has the potential to, you know, build eco literacy, reconnect people to natural resources, and then just provide a little bit of green and quiet in a bustling urban area.
Well, not a bad way to think. Anna, what do you think?
Well, I agree with everything you all just said, and I also feel like self-reliance, increasing self-reliance for the participants who want to be able to help themselves and just don't have a place to grow food. Our members get about 45 pounds a month from May to October of organic produce that they otherwise would not be buying.
And that food is freedom, isn't it?
Yeah. And then intergenerational sharing, especially we have 85% of our members are farm workers, and to be able to share with their children the agricultural heritage that they grew up with that their children don't have here in the city. So that's really beautiful.
And, you know, it's probably even a different way of looking at farming, too. When you're a farm worker, you see one element of it, which is probably a hoe or something like that. But when you're a gardener, you get to enjoy actually what you're eating, and it's probably a whole different a whole different part of it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try going back to Rob. Rob, I asked a question, you know, food is freedom, and the more closely we relate with our food, the more free we are. Is that an accurate estimate in your mind?
I would definitely say so, because it helps us to create resilience and also reduces our carbon footprint overall, reconnects us with the soil, and it's therapeutic, definitely.
What do you see, how do you see urban farming and gardening changing the landscape of the city?
Well, I feel that it will overall improve community action. Interaction in particular, helping people to reconnect with their neighbors, but also to improve local environmental quality, air quality and water quality in particular.
Put a little green in things. What do you think, Melinda?
I agree. You know, we've been focusing on food, of course, because this segment is on urban ag, but we have young people and older folks looking at pollinators, you know, native perennial plants that support our insects and community, and so you know, just understanding how things work together is very valuable.
Wow. Well,
plant community and people.
Thank you very much, Rob Bennington, Melinda Stockton, Anna. Also, Supervisor David Chu in San Francisco. Also, Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of San Francisco Recreation and Parks. And thank all of you out there for tuning in the Food Chain today. I want you to remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.